I'm not sure how familiar you all are with the word sojourner and its biblical origin. The word itself doesn't truly have an exact biblical translation, but essentially its Hebrew cousin refers to the alien or those traveling through, guests even, temporarily in residence. The verbiage is not absolutely clear. The Mosaic law of how believers should treat sojourners is quite clear. We are to care for the sojourner as they pass through or temporarily reside. This law found its suggestion in Scripture, where those who planted or grew and then harvested their fields were required to leave some things behind, enough that the widow, the orphan, and the sojourner could glean enough to be sustained. In the New Testament, we find equal backing and commands to care for other, be they locals, a nearby Samaritan, or brothers and sisters of the faith passing through. In a nutshell, caring for other was expected in the newfound Christian tradition and was celebrated when done well. We hear the sentiment in today's scripture from 3 John's first chapter, verses 1 through 8, from Paul to his good friend and pastor, Gaius. I was most happy when some friends arrived and brought the news that you persist in following the way of the truth. Nothing could make me happier than getting reports that my children continued diligently in the way of the truth. Dear friend, when you extend hospitality to Christian brothers and sisters, even when they are strangers, you make the faith visible. They've made a full report back to the church here, a message about your love. It's good work you're doing, helping these travelers on their way. Hospitality worthy of God Himself. They set out under the banner of the name and get no help from unbelievers, so they deserve any support we can give them. In providing meals and a bed, we become their companions in spreading the truth. That kind of echoes Christ's words in Matthew's Gospel. When you care for these, you care for me. Now, we've just completed a sermon series entitled Church, Why Bother? And last week, to conclude the study, we encouraged our regular attenders to not only make it a priority to be here, but to bring a friend with them. Now, to be honest, picking one date to go all out is kind of risky, because no date is perfect for everyone. You know, there were those who were traveling, those under the weather. And though we did not have Christmas Eve numbers, we did have a half dozen or so guests, and their welcome was, you welcomed them well. Park Street pals, you know how to care for the sojourner, and that makes me so happy. Such hospitality is essential for those who are seeking community, especially the sojourner. In days such as these, folks are longing for supportive community, but not just when times are tough. Sometimes they just may be in need of good banter, an uplifting encounter, people-to-people engagement, shoot, just good company. You can see the need and desire by the number of wine clubs, beer clubs, expressive art clubs, book clubs, parent and child play dates, craft sausage-making clubs, chick-a-pig game night, nightclubs, and of course, country clubs. Pick up the Seaville. Opportunities galore are listed to meet, eat, take a seat, or greet. Even the quietest of folks are intended to be communal. But if this longing for community is such a real thing, why aren't churches filled with all of these community seekers? I mean, we're here. You see the sign on the corner. You see we've got a Facebook and a web page. My goodness, there are churches on every street corner. So why are they empty? Well, there are a lot of reasons for this, and we've covered many of them over the past weeks. But first, let's just think about this one, fear of commitment. For folks who are overextended, for them to consider truly jumping into a community with both feet might be overwhelming. It might limit some of their options, right? We have so many options. It's hard to choose. And if you choose one option, it might interfere with choosing another one. Not to mention joining a community may become inconvenient. It may cost you something. Time. Space. It might actually require some duty. And if the payoff of the community is not deemed worth someone's while, well, they'll just slip away or never join in the first place. Yep, most humans are all about the payoff. You know, the benefit of joining. Prestige, status, reverence, elevated self-worth are big motivators whether we admit it or not. Social merit points. From travel soccer teams to academic debate teams, They offer their participants not only community, but their members some kind of street cred. And then there's the flip side of that coin, the fear of association, not wanting to align too closely with any one group for fear of alienating another. Again, folks like to keep their options open. All of this needing community but fearing to commit to community has resulted in a growing self-defined alienation. You know, loneliness is on the climb, and there seems to be an increase in social-like communities. Things like social media. How many Twitter followers do you have? How many Facebook friends? How many likes did you get on that last post? Social media is community junk food. It fills the pit in your stomach for a short while, but soon you'll need another fix of unhealthy, empty validation, seeking to be seen without risk of the person-to-person encounter, which may really require something of you. You know, accountability. Even soccer teams have that. Don't show up for practice. Don't play. But if we are really, really honest about why other groups are sought out and even growing when most churches are not, we have to again face the reputation of the religious. We've been talking about this for weeks now. Our street rep is not that great. There are so many walking wounded from childhood, especially those teen years. The judgmental and harsh criticism has scolded droves right out the door. And those wounded expats are having children that never set foot in the doors of what they deem as deity dungeons for fear of persecution. It's easy to point our fingers at those other denominations and traditions, though, isn't it? But you have to remember that we are the them to those other folks. It might also be good to grasp that whenever you engage community, there is a good chance that you might run into humans. Yes, ever and always flawed humans do appear. There is nary a one that is perfect, therefore we must get real about our own gnarly wart and hairs before judging others. Now, to complicate matters even more, each group has at least one or two hoops to jump through just to be considered in. We all are guilty of harboring unspoken expectations of those acquainting our faith community. Do they really fit in? And yet, to be fair to we people of community, those encountering us have their own fears and or expectations too. We can have all of the decorations just right. We can have the space cleaned and sparkling and the coffee piping hot. We can have the caked ice and ready to serve. But if our coconut cake isn't the flavor guests may prefer, there's a good chance they'll find a place that gives them what they really want. That's what happens with consumers seeking community. So here's the deal. We, Park Street, are a faith community. We're not a soccer team. We're not a deli where folks can place special orders and we serve them up. We need to be who we are called to be, uniquely shaped by the ever-changing, sojourning face of those who gather, with one non-negotiable cornerstone commandment given to us by Christ. Love God and love people, all people. We must live and love all folks whom we encounter. We must care for other, especially the sojourner, because in truth we are all resident aliens on this planet seeking community. Your kindness just may be a seed planted with a far-reaching legacy that you may never ever see its end to. God works in mysterious ways. You can count on that. Which brings me to a legacy of love and friendship, which is very personal to me. Now, we have our friend Lauren here, who's been visiting with us for a few weeks now. To say she stumbled upon us would not be accurate. But bear with me as I acknowledge Providence's hand as I see it in my own life. In 1993, Paul and I were married and moved to Charlottesville with my three children. We were indeed sojourners, as Paul and I were both students in universities. My oldest son, Matt, was 9, Zach was 6, and Morgan was just about 4. It was the beginning of the year, and there was a parents' night for Matt, our then third grader. Paul stayed home with the kids, so I ended up going solo to Stony Point Elementary School. I was anxious, not knowing a soul. My go-to companion when in such a situation is a book. I can read instead of awkwardly waiting for things to begin. So on that night, as I stepped out of my car with book in hand, I was approached by a dynamic woman in a jean jacket who, without a beat and in a thick Long Island accent, said, "I love that book." The first parent to greet me at Stony Point Elementary School was Eileen. Eileen would become one of my absolute best friends. My energy was no match to hers, and her swift kindness and humor and laugh and welcome was contagious. It's no surprise that her son Zach, a fellow third grader, would become one of my son Matt's best friends. Eileen always believed in me, more than I did in myself. And in one of our last conversations, she shared a kind of vision she had for me. She said, "I can see you really becoming a strong leader, especially a leader of women. And if I can, I will be one of them." It has been well over a decade since we've said goodbye to her. But her spirited legacy lives on in her children and her grandchildren and in folks like me. Eileen cared for the sojourner. She cared for me, so much so, that when I feel uncertain about God's calling in my life, I close my eyes and I hear her and I keep going. So here we are, Park Street, and on this day have been asked by Eileen's son Zach and his wife Lauren to lift up, welcome, and support them as a family of faith who are ready to dedicate and raise their sons, Grayson and Finnegan, to be followers of Christ. Lauren and Zach are indeed sojourners. Zach has recently completed officers' candidate school in Fort Benning, Georgia. He has also officially been assigned to his new branch, and as soon as his security clearance passes, Lauren and the boys will move from their hometown of Charlottesville and join Zach at Fort Gordon in Augusta, Georgia. Zach was able to obtain a short notice leave this weekend, and they both have asked if their children could be dedicated today in a place that has been the embodiment of welcome to the sojourner, to Lauren, and to the boys in Zach's absence. I am sure that you are as grateful as I am to share in this milestone moment.